You're listening to Real Conversations with Jacob Young. Real Conversations is sponsored by Boys Town, saving children, healing families for over 100 years. Please go to boystown.org to learn how you can help the girls and boys of Boys Town. It's also brought to you by Next Generation Storytellers, paving the way for young filmmakers, one film at a time. Now, my guest this week, for over 35 years, has pursued his passion for all things vintage, motorized. His quest has taken him to far corners of the world, unearthing treasures and unraveling the interesting stories behind each piece he discovers. His journey as an everyday archaeologist began at the very young age of 8, when he stumbled upon the joy of refurbishing bicycles for profit. And this early experience ignited a lifelong fascination with historical artifacts and antiques. This week's guest has had the honor of joining forces with his brother on the popular TV show American Pickers, featured on the History Channel. Together, they unearth what they call rusty gold. My guest this week is American Picker Robert Wolf. You know what time it is. It's time to keep it real with Real Conversations with Jacob Young.
What's going on, guys?
Hey, man. Good to see you.
Good to see you.
Yeah, thanks for joining me. I'm such a huge fan of the show because it's been one of my all-time favorite things to do is to go antiquing. And I've been a collector myself for a very long time.
I think everybody at heart is a collector from your time that you're a kid till even into your adulthood. And it seems like the more, even when you transition into life with your family, it seems like you tend to go back that direction.
Yeah, there's something very nostalgic about remembering history.
Oh, 100%. 100%. That's where we all evolved from somewhere, you know, and whether it was our grandfather who maybe worked on the railroad or worked on the locks or built a building downtown Chicago, that it's all pieces of history that made us who we are today.
So true. Well, let's just talk a little bit about that. In all your years of finding buried treasure, so to speak, what are some of your top three discoveries?
Oh God, that's it's so tough. I get asked that quite often. And, I think the storylines tend to be more about than it is the discovery sometimes. Sometimes the story makes the piece that we're looking at that might be $50 worth that much more because the story that how that piece got to where it is. But there was a guy that I picked in Detroit one time, probably about 15 years ago. He had called me about a motorcycle and 92 years old. He was an Air Force pilot. And flew 64 missions. And I could have sat and listened to his stories for I don't even know how long. He sat at his kitchen table and finally I asked him, I go, hey, where's the motorcycle? And he goes, and his daughter said, it's in the basement. He's been hiding parts down there for, since we grew up here. And I was like, oh, that's kind of neat. So I go in the basement. Keep in mind, this is a two-bedroom house. There's an airplane in the basement. I mean, a full-size airplane that's in the basement. The guy had built it in the basement. And I was like, there's an airplane down there. He goes, oh, yeah, my dad built that in the 80s. He couldn't figure out how to get it out of there. So we just left it down there. So he always wanted to fly again, but he never got around to it. And that was something that that kind of always stuck with me. I ended up buying the motorcycle. It was all in pieces and dragging it out of there. I had heard later on that he had passed away and the family had a guy from Texas ended up coming and excavating the back of the house and then taking all the block out. And that's how they got the airplane out of the house. So it ended up being in a great location and the story still goes on. But I love stuff like that. Anything literature-wise, Civil War-wise that you can find and people can read, stories from back in those days, and then even World War One or World War Two intrigues me. Car history intrigues me the most, I think, and probably one of the best cars I've ever found I still own today. It's a 1932 Ford pickup truck that was built in 1952. It was in Chicago. A guy owned a pizza company there. And he basically ended up building this truck. It was his daily driver, and he had fun with it. It was a good piece, and it went into the barn, never to be seen again. I ended up buying it at a swap meet, and I ended up actually putting it back together to what it is right now, which is 100% original.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. That's the, you know, there's so many stories. I could sit and tell stories all day long.
I'm sure. How often do y'all, cause I know you've got the passion with, you know, motorcycles and cars and everything else, but how often you find yourself getting attached and then like refurbishing something that you're passionate about?
Well, you know, it's difficult for me to say we refurbish things. When it comes to advertising, I'm a huge advertising guy. I will refurbish a sign because I think that history of that piece needs to be, you know, be retold. Bicycles, I tend to try and leave them alone to what they were. Cars are the same thing. So, you know, when we talk about refurbishing, I want to do a mechanical on it. I want to make the bicycle work again, and I want to be able to ride it and leave it alone. Mm-hmm. Same thing with the cars or the trucks or the signs that I do. I'm constantly in my shop working with my hands every day, but I'm not like refurbishing. So when most people talk about refurbishing, they think of full blown restoration. Right. And we don't ever do any of that stuff.
Yeah. Painting, sandblasting.
Yeah, we get away from all that. I think that takes away from the story and the history that we're dealing with.
Yeah. And I've noticed about that, you know, with the show, it's, you and Mike, you both have that interest in, you know, making sure that the history still remains inside of that object.
Yeah, you want to leave it intact, and you want to be able to retell that story from what the story was that was told to you at the time. So that's the thing that most people don't understand. When they come in my shop, I can retell the story of that piece exactly as I found it, and that's the cool thing about it.
Yeah. How does connecting with the past help us today in our present world?
Man, that's a great question. I don't know. I think, you know, in my personal opinion is it takes us back to a time, you know, I think about the stuff that I'm looking for a Chrysler Newport, the ugliest car ever made in America, you know, in my opinion. And I had a 74 that my mom had given me, and it was a big purple beast. But, you know, going back to me, how I get a connection to that was the very first car I ever drove. And now I'm trying to reconnect to that feeling of actually being able to drive it again. And, you know, and let my kids drive it. So they understood what it was about. So sometimes reconnecting with the past is about allowing some of the people that you're surrounded with, you know, be with you. They're actually connecting with it at the same time you are.
Right. No, yeah. It's so true. So this car, was it your first car you owned, or was it the first car you drove?
Very first car I ever owned.
Nice.
Yeah, Chrysler Newport. Had a 440 in it, could barely pay the gas bill on it, but I love to drive that thing. So I don't know. I found myself doing some searches today, and I found a couple, but you know, my wife thinks I'm nuts. I have like 15 to 20 cars at any given time. She's like, I don't know why you have to have all these. And to me, it's a simple fact that it's a connecting. I'm connected to that piece. That's why I have it. And that's why I tend to, you know, like trucks to me, I owned a company. It was a big company. It was all we did was, you know, everything was about trucks. So I think trucks in America built us, you know, they built the whole country. So I've got a couple 1-ton trucks that I have. I've got some regular, you know, Model T, Model A's, and then I get into the 30s and now I'm in the 40s. But I think that those things connect us to our past and how America got built. That's one thing that intrigues the heck out of me I just finished doing part of the Lincoln Highway, and to see the Lincoln Highway, what it was back in the day, think about how it was traveled. I just traveled part of it with a 1984 Suburban, and it just took me back to a different part of America that people don't really understand and they don't get a chance to. You know, we're always busy, life's so busy, and we're always on these 4 and 5 lane highways now. And I always try, my brother says it best, you know, get on the 2 lanes and you'll see America, what it really was about.
Yeah, you know, it's funny you mentioned that and talking about Ford. I know we were talking briefly before the podcast. My company, Next Generation Storytellers, is under the umbrella of the Ford Motor Company. which is Ford Next Generation Learning, which started with Henry Ford when he had to build the assembly line and teach it for us and educate them to build these things that they never had built before. And that has never stopped. And they're still doing that to this day. And there's 46 locations across the United States and in the UK where they're educating these kids that may or may not go to secondary school.
Right.
But they are walking away with a vocational skill set that they can actually go into the workforce and work. And I think there's a lot to be said about that. It's just as far as like what the Ford Motor Company and Henry Ford did back in those days.
Well, I've got photographs. I'm a photograph freak for some reason. I've probably got 8,000 to 10,000 photographs of things across America. And it could be of assembly lines. It could be of old garages. It could be of just old downtowns or panoramics of what things used to be. And I love talking about that. You know, when you look at what Ford did with the assembly line back in the early days, no one had ever done that before, you know, and to do that and then teach a workforce on exactly how to put that car together and then at the other end have a car come out, he was mass production at its best, and they still do it to this day. I mean, there's not an assembly line out there that doesn't really, you know, besides the new robotic stuff, but, you know, John Deere, we have John Deere right here, and they did the same thing with the tractor line. So when you look at that innovation in America, God, look at what it's taken us to now.
What do you think you've learned about yourself from being on these treasure hunts?
Honestly, I was probably the worst student. My brother, you know, it wasn't about grades to us. We weren't looking at going to college. We did end up going to college, but we weren't like, it wasn't pressed down our throat to go to college is what it was, you know, like it was back in the day. Like it is right now in today's world. I think I've learned in life that you need to slow down. You need to appreciate what's in front of you and understand where other people are coming from. I think that, or what other people, what they went through to get to where they are in life. So listening to people's stories and having them tell you things and do all that stuff, that makes you understand whether they're Black, Chinese, Hispanic, any of that, how they got to this world and what they had to go through to get to here and how their family had, you know. So that's one of the things I think I treasure the most is understanding the world we live in better, so to say, because the treasure hunts we're on is it teaches us every day. And honestly, I tell people, you know, everybody always says to me, oh, you guys know so much. I'm like, hey, I learn every day. There's not a day that goes by that I don't learn something. And if my teachers were here that I had in high school, they'd laugh at me because I stopped learning a long time ago when I was in high school, but after I got out and really got into the world, it was like every day is a learning experience if you can open your eyes and listen.
Sure. Yeah. And speaking to that a little bit, do you think the world that you grew up in and the world that we are in now is better or worse? And if so, how can we fix it?
Ooh, man, that's a tough one. I think it's 10 times worse. I think technology has ruined, you know, the world that I know knew. I don't know. I grew up every day. I lived in the woods behind my house. You know, kids don't do that anymore. I gave my kids the opportunity to do that. And I think that the world that we live in nowadays, everything is in the forefront. It's on a cell phone. And I think it, you know, it's, you know, you get these TikTok videos, you get these people that they're getting paid as a youth that's 10, 11, 12, 13 years old to do these videos, and they're missing out on what I call life that's in front of them. So how do you fix that? Wow. That's a hard one. I think it's infixable at this point because we've had the cell phones too long. Even in the picking world, I mean, it's changed what I call the picking world as a whole, because back in the days when my brother and I were picking, we had no cell phones, we had no Google, we had no computer. Everything that we bought or did was by your gut feeling or understanding a story and wanting to buy that story. That was how we did it back then. Now everything is, well, let me look it up, let me do this, let me research it before they buy it.
Yeah, there's a lot of a lot more information out there for sure. But yeah, no, but that speaks volumes to your relationship with Mike. So, I mean, what age were you guys going and starting to do all that together?
Yeah, I mean, my brother and I, we were inseparable as kids. My father wasn't in the picture, so from the time that we were 6 years old to the time that we got into, probably junior high, where he started having friends, I started having friends. Our friend groups tended to connect together all the time, it seems like. And him and I will always be, it's funny because he likes the same things I like, or I should say I like the same things he likes. He'll throw that in my face all the time. You need to stay away from bicycles because I like those. Rob, you can't be following my footsteps. I'm like, I'm not really following in your footsteps, brother. Sometimes you're chasing me and sometimes I'm chasing you. That's how it works sometimes. Sure. But I think, I want to say we probably started when we were 6 years old, and my grandfather owned a salvage place in Chicago, and God, that was our wonderland. We could go there and get lost in, architectural salvage all over his yard. It was everywhere. And my mom would just let us go play. She'd let us wander,
Yeah.
And as we got older, we started doing, we grew up on the Mississippi River, so we kind of grew up thinking that we were Huck Finn and always wanted to build the raft and float down the river. But as we were, when we started doing some of that stuff, we found junkyards that were along the way, and then those intrigued us, and wow, next thing you know, we're looking at cars and doing all those things. So it's kind of evolved is what it's done.
Yeah.
So.
Now, speaking about your father not really being in your life, was that because he was working or he wasn't around?
No, he was. My mom divorced my father probably around when I was probably 2 years old, and he was never in my life. We kind of reconnected after I got out of high school, and he lived in Chicago, and I knew about him. But my mom, my mom pretty much raised our family. She she never talked badly of my father. He was just never in the picture. And it seemed like the friends groups that I grew up with, that was the same thing with them. All the kids that I connected with, they didn't have fathers at home either. So I always say that, my mom raised us, but the guys that I grew up with, they actually helped raise who we became.
Well, you're not alone, brother. I grew up in a similar situation, and my mom was the big force in our lives, and my parents were divorced, so I can completely relate to that. And there's a moment in our lives where we go, are we gonna sit there and say woe is me, or are we gonna just keep picking up the pieces and moving forward? But it sounds like that's what you and Mike did.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we had my grandma, my grandma was a big moving force in me. She was as wild as could be. She was a craps dealer in Bullhead City, Arizona, when she was in her 80s. She used to drive a dune buggy back and forth to work. So I think some of our wild side came from that side of the family, I tend to tell people. So I think in this world, period, kids nowadays, you can sit there and say, woe is me. Or you can be like, hey, you know what? I always look at today as God gave you another day on this earth. Are you going to sit and say, woe is me? Or are you going to pick up your pieces and move forward? Because whatever happened 10 minutes ago, what we were just talking about 10 minutes ago, we can't go back and change.
Right.
Just keep moving forward. A lot of people sit there and they get depressed over what happened 2 weeks ago or a year ago or 3 years ago. You can't change it. You have to find a way to get beyond that. So, it was growing up as a kid, not having a parent there. I really never even thought. My mom was always there for me. She was, she did a great job raising us and allowing us to, wander and do the things we wanted to do. I mean, I always remember my mom, she never put her car in the garage because she gave the garage to my brother and I, because we were always bringing home so much stuff. Not too many parents would have given that up. And I think we had a Four Seasons room at one house. That Four Seasons room and the two-car garage became an area that my brother and I kind of took over everything in.
So who would you say is the biggest influence on your career, and what has that person taught you?
I'm going to give kudos to my mom, but there's a lot of people. I think there is a lot of people that I've traveled the United States with for years that have now passed on, that I tend to have them in the back of my head chirping at me, you know, telling me things. One good friend of mine was Jim Green, and I traveled probably for 8-9 years with him, and he died about 3 years ago from brain cancer. But just having those talks when we were on the road about life, about what was going on in my life, what was going on in his life, how he grew up. He was an older gentleman, and I could never repay those times that we had together. Bob Peterson, he's been on the show several times, and he was my go-to guy when it had anything to do with motors or engines or anything mechanical. Bob, he was just a character, but he always had something positive to say, and he always could make, I don't care what it was, he could make it run. And he always, when I was thinking about it, I was like, he always told me, he goes, all you need is a spark, you need a little fuel, and you got to have some air mixture. And if you got all that, you'll always make it run, Robbie. And every time I look at a project and it hasn't ran, or I just, Bob's in my brain telling me these things. So there's so many that have influenced me over the years. And I hope to meet a lot more. I can tell you that, because I'm not done yet. I'm nowhere near done.
Yeah. No, I was in high school, you know, mom was raising me. And I had a wrestling coach that was, you know, very, you know, just, he was always there. He was cool. And there was these twins that grew up, and they were big Oregon Ducks college football players. They were twin brothers, the Groshon twins, I think their names were. And they drove matching 64 Chevys, but one was like light blue and one was like maroon. And I remember as a kid, I was like, wow, there goes the Groshons, right? And then one day I come back home after I'd already been in television for a long time, and I went to visit my wrestling coach, and there's that one of the trucks sitting out there, flat tires. It's got a couple dents on it. It's all banged up. And I went to him. I said, what are you doing with it? And he knew that I needed a vehicle, but he was just like, well, I'll tell you what, if you give me $100 and you get it out of here, it's yours.
Yeah. Yeah, and isn't that the greatest feeling in the world?
The greatest. And I drove that thing. I had somebody pull me with a tow rope, get me back to, you know, because I grew up in Tillamook, Oregon, up in the Northwest. And so, yeah, you know, it was totally fine to do something like that in that area. And within about 2 hours, I figured out that the points were seized on it, and I got that thing fired up, and I drove that truck through high school.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. There's no better feeling in the world than to make something, like when I find something in a barn and I get the opportunity to make it run. You know, when Bob Peterson, he's been on the show, he's since passed in the last 2 years, but just his characterism, when he would make something run, his the smile that you put on his face, he's so excited. And I see that excitement, and you're just as excited, you know? So I don't know. It's funny, because I always tell my friends, I've done so many barn find cars and so many trucks. I'm like, they'll look at you and go, that thing ain't gonna run. And then I'll just be like, I'll lay $100 bill on the fender and be like, come back in 2 hours, it'll be running.
Yeah.
and that's just a challenge to myself. But and usually I get it to work somehow, some way. I get it to work, so it's fun.
Do you think the social media generation of today has interest in antiques and are looking into our past?
Oh yeah. I mean, you know, social media as a whole, I do a ton of social media. I've got a social media director that helps us do some stuff. And, I definitely see them having, you know, from the comments that I get, from the messages that I get, there's definitely a connection there. People are interested in it. I mean, if they weren't, they wouldn't be. You know, it's like people wouldn't, I don't think they'd follow who I am if they weren't really interested in the antiques that I post or what I'm doing or the project I'm working on. One of the things that intrigues me more than anything, though, is the European connection that we have, or I should say the worldwide connection that we have with people. The show has connected us to a whole vast the worldwide population. So, you know, like Spain and Italy and Australia and England and South America and Mexico. I mean, I get so many messages a week now from people over there, and they'll send me pictures of things that they have over there wanting me to try and research information for them. So social media is in that sense, I think, has connected, is a good thing, because it helps us to understand where we came from, and it helps us to research more in the past of what's going on. Like, there's stuff that I've posted out there that I don't know anything about, and I'll be like, hey, anybody out there, you know anything about this? And boom, I got 100 messages. You know, that came from so-and-so, and it came from this region, and, you know, they'll give you every information. I just recently bought 2 Jensen cars, which a lot of people don't even understand. Jensen was a car that was actually imported in the United States around 1952, 53, and they were built up into the 70s. And these 2 cars came from England, and I knew nothing about them, just that they intrigued me because of the way they looked. They were just so bizarre looking. I'm like, mm-hmm. I got to get these things. They're just crazy looking. So once I did a video on it, all of a sudden now my inbox is blown up. I got the Jensen Motor Club. I got the guys in the United States that are hitting me up on how to help restore it, what I need to do, every piece. Here, give me the VIN number and the license plate number off that. I'll tell you exactly where it was sold, everything about the car. So in that sense, social media has helped. And I think it helps across the board with everybody. I'm sure you see it with yours.
Yeah, sure. I mean, it is inspiring when somebody takes attention to what you're doing and is involved in that way. And like you're talking about with the clubs, I think that is, you know, I mean, that's the impression that you want to walk away with. There's, you know, there is some downsides, and I, you know, because I'm a father of 3, you know, I do see some negativity as far as unreal ideas that exist out there, because anybody can cut and edit anything together, and they call that life.
Right. I'm with you. I mean, I don't know how old your kids are, but I've dealt with it right now, and I've got 5 kids. So the oldest is 28, 25, 21, and a set of twins at the end are 19. So I have 3 girls actually in college at the same time. So,
oh, wow.
it's been an interesting, you know, to see them go off to school and then come back, you know, a year later and hear their values change and things that are going on. And, I don't know, it's a different world, you know, for sure.
Yeah, it totally is. And I'm with my son, who's, you know, he's going to be driving soon. He's my oldest, but you know, there's great things to social media, and there's some value to it, and I think there's some really negative things that I've had to talk to him about TikTok, you know, and like there's a lot of other things that are happening on some of these other Snapchat and things like that, which I go, I mean, when I was your age, man, I was outside playing and doing fun things, and you're consumed by some other's image of what you think their life or they think your life should be.
Yeah.
So it's a there's a catch 22. It's a double-edged sword for sure. Let's talk a little bit about what you're up to next. As far as you were just we mentioned it, we talked briefly before this interview about some of your giving back and your charitable projects. Let us know what's going on there.
Well, I've got a project that we put together, and it's starting to kick off in the next year here, but we offered up to 3 of the high schools here that are local to actually bring their history students down to my shop. You know, everybody that walks in my shop, they're like, hey, it's a museum. I'm like, nah, it's not really a museum. It's just a lot of history down here. So I told the history teachers to bring them down here, let them use their cell phones, let them take pictures of things in my shop, let them wander around, touch things, move things around. be intrigued for, you know, for a little bit. If they want to know story behind the piece, I'll be able to help them with that. But take that information that they get, take it back to the school, and have them write three reports of three items that they found in my shop, like where the piece came from, what was the history behind it, what was happening in the United States at the time. All these things go into play. Those three reports help the teacher, you know, with school, and the students got to write it. At the end of the year, the teacher then gives me the reports that which she grades as an A, B, C, D, and then gives me the reports. I get to go through them, and we will offer a $2,000 scholarship for educational purposes, meaning you can go on to college with that. You can go on to a secondary school. Whatever we need to do to get you to, in the right direction. So I always think that I was always taught growing up that giving back as much as you can to the younger generation. And I'm not about trying to get something out of that. I'm trying to about, if I always look at some, look at it this way. If I can leave this earth better than I, than when I came here, that's my way of doing it. Like if I can get one kid that's involved in history and he pursues a passion for whatever it is, and it came from me, then I did my job on this earth. That's how I look at it.
Yeah.
I mean, I've saved a lot of stuff over the years. I save a ton of stuff over the years, but saving it is not actually getting it into the right hands or putting it to that next person. So, you know, it's like, I just had a 14-year-old kid that was in here. He did a, the history of Harley Davidson. I helped him do a whole report on it. And this year he came back to me, he called me up and goes, "Hey, I love that you helped me." He goes, "I've got to write another report next year about something that changed America." And I said, and I thought, and I go, "What would you think it would be?" You know, he's 15 now. So he's starting to think about it. And I said, I go, "How about you think about how, the man on the moon changed America." Think about something like that. I go, "So look at the space age and what it's done and where we're at today." You know, I go, "That would be a great report to write." So he's working on that now, and I've connected him with some people I knew at NASA and some other things. So hopefully, you know, maybe I'll end up being an astronaut. I don't know.
Great.
It's the hope of actually getting it into the next field. That's the cool thing.
Yeah. Well, you know, I always say you can't take it with you.
No.
If you can't give it back and you have all that, I mean, that's, for me, that was a defining moment that happened in my life. And I just said, it's not me that's important. It's the ones that are going to have to follow in our footsteps.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. So I always look at all the stuff I have. Some days I look at it and go, "Gosh, I've lost my mind. What am I doing with all this stuff?" And I don't want to be the guy that a picker's picking my family now. You know, I always tell my kids, I'm like, "Hey, Dad, Mom has allowed me to do what I've done. And I have this great building and I have this, I can come in here and it's awesome. But when I'm dead and gone, I want you to sell every single thing in here and put it in people's hands so that maybe they can get it into the next person's hands and keep moving it to the next generation," I should say.
Yeah, no doubt. Hey, let me ask you, Rob, if there was one thing that you could change about yourself, what would that be?
Wow. I wish I took the time to read more, you know, something like that, that because I think that my wife was big in allowing our kids to read, and she pushed that envelope with them. And I see where my kids are now today and how they still, even at 25, 26, 28 years old, are still doing that same thing. And I think that reading educates us in a different sense, you know, podcasts. I'm a podcast guy. I listen to podcasts all over the United States when I'm traveling. I mean, we travel 60,000 miles a year. So you can imagine how many podcasts we listen to.
Yeah.
But I think reading is one of the things that I would change. I would have gone back and actually spent more time reading and educating myself when I was in high school.
Well, I mean, you know, I mean, that's really, you know, it's great to be able to recognize that. But I mean, the life experiences that you got.
Yeah.
Can you find that in a book?
No, but it can connect some of the life experiences that I've had with other people. You know, some of those similarities are in, you know, I listened to Matthew McConaughey's Green Light, the other day on a podcast or on Audible book, and listening to his book made me understand a lot about my life and the things that were going on in it, and when that green light went off and what moved the needle forward, I should say. So I think reading doesn't just educate us in a sense, but it educates us. It connects you in some sense to other things. And I'm not just talking about like reading fiction and novels. I'm talking about reading real life stories.
Right.
What I'm talking about.
If you could take a ride in the Jacob Young time machine, what advice would you give to teenage Rob?
Wow. You know, I always told myself if I could go back, I would do it all over again, exactly as I did, because I'd still want to be where I am right now. I love what I do every day. I've got a passion for what I do. And when you can get up in the morning and do those things, I guess I would have, if I could go back in the time machine, I would say to my younger self, I would say, listen to my teachers more and educate myself more. I didn't spend enough time doing that. And, I think I would have gotten ahead sooner in life than I'm 57 now. I would have gotten ahead a lot sooner in life, I think, by listening to what, you know, my elders had to say, especially my stepfather. I mean, I find myself saying things that my mom would tell me to my kids now, and my kids don't listen to me. So it's like, that's kind of a catch-22 there.
Yeah.
Or you run into the same thing with your kids.
Right, of course. Which we don't want.
Wait till they get older.
Yeah. Before I ask the last question, I just want to make sure that everybody knows to follow Rob on Instagram at it's RJ Wolf Picker. It's coming up on the screen right now. So make sure that if you're watching this and you didn't know where to find him, you can find him right here. My sponsor, Boys Town, has had an expression for many, many years, ever since Father Flanagan was around turn of the century. And it was because very early on, they didn't have all the things that they needed to help every child. And they tried their best. And one kid couldn't walk. And so they would take turns carrying him to class and to football games. And one day, Father said, you know, isn't he heavy? And the kid looked at him and said, he's not heavy, Father. He's my brother. Meaning in our lives, we've had somebody carry us. Who's carried you?
Well, I look up to, I would have to actually say my brother has carried me a lot. You know, growing up without a father in the house, as you know, having a brother that was only, you know, 18 months older than me, he helped me grow into the person that I was and educate me, I guess, along the way. Things that I should be doing, not doing. And I think we kind of helped each other, but, God, I would have to say that. And then my stepfather and my mom, I mean, those three people right there, my brother, my stepfather, and my mom, allowing us to do the things that we were able to do, and educating me along the way. And then, you know, allowing us to make the mistakes. I mean, I think that, you know, my brother would tell me one thing and I'd do the opposite of it. And then he'd look at me and go, I told you that's not how you do that. Or that wasn't the way you were supposed to do it, but allowing you to make the mistake so you didn't do it again. And I think my mom was very good at that with our whole family. And I think that parents nowadays tend to coddle their kids and not allow them to make the mistakes they make. That's how they grow. And that's how we get to where we are. If you can't, I always say, you know, there's still mistakes I still make. Admit the mistake, move on, and better yourself from it.
Great advice, brother. Remind everybody when they can see new episodes of American Pickers.
All new episodes of American Pickers, they start on Wednesday. They'll actually be on tonight, Wednesday nights on History Channel at 8 Central. We are still on television. Everybody asks us that all the time, and we're filming daily. Or we've got 40 new episodes that are coming out. Those will probably not be aired until next year. This is stuff that you're seeing now is stuff that we shot last year. But we appreciate you guys watching. And I can't say enough. Anytime I get asked to be on a podcast, it's about me giving back something that I learned along the way. And I appreciate you guys having me on. on here and actually listening to the voice, and then hopefully you learn something from it. I don't know. Like I said, my job is to at least get one person. That's all I need, and I better my life.
Well, you've certainly done that, and I know it's going to be more than one person. You've affected this person here that's interviewing you, and I want to say thank you so much for joining me today, and your show has been one of my all-time favorites. Thank you for sharing your stories and all of your hours of entertainment on television.
Thank you, guys. Thank you for having me on, Jacob. I appreciate it. And, you know, if it wasn't a passion, we wouldn't be doing it. I can tell you we're rolling into 15 years now on TV. So it's without the viewers and the people that come up to us on a daily basis and say, you know, hey, I learned something from that, or I learned something from you on that edge, on that episode, or that, those are the things that drive the force and go, I did catch one person. I'm going to keep doing this. I'm going to keep moving the needle forward. So if we keep doing that, who knows, we could have another 15 years.
We'll keep on doing it because I'm enjoying it. And I know many, many people out there across the world are enjoying it too. Your passion, your brother's passion, it speaks volumes across this nation and many other nations.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
That's about all the time that we have for this week, but the Boys Town toll-free national hotline is 1-800-448-3000. It's a 24/7 crisis resource referral number for kids and their parents, and they're always there to help anybody that's having suicidal thoughts, risking any type of self-harm, parenting problems, physical, sexual, or emotional abuse, stress, anxiety, anger problems, school problems like bullying, or peer pressure, or chemical dependency. If you're suffering with any of these issues, or you just need someone to talk to, they're there for you 24/7. Just call the Boys Town National Hotline, 1-800-448-3000. You don't feel like talking? You can text VOICE to 20121. Someone will get back to you immediately. Boys Town, saving children, healing families. Until next time, love each other and love yourself.